Welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to Finding You, another episode of your favorite Blog Talk Radio show. I'm Marvin Rohn, your host. And today we have Current Event Wednesday. It's Current Event on the show. And today we're going to talk about something very interesting. And what we want to do today, as always, is begin with the empowerment pledge. And that pledge is I will work on myself. And we all know that there's some issues that all of us need to work on. But it's your job, your duty, your responsibility to work on yourself, your issues, your concerns, your hurts, and your pains. It's your obligation and commitment to do the things necessary to make you a better person. And all I'm asking you to do is simply try to work on yourself every day to become the best person that you can be today and every day. All you have to do is just find yourself. And as we continue this process of the show Finding You and Empowerment 365, it is a process of getting to know where you are, who you are, and how you can become better, examining your ways, your thinking, and creating new possibilities for how we exist and how we treat each other and how we can become better people, better citizens, better human beings. And so without delay, today we're going to get into the show. My co-host Stan Macklin won't be with us today, but hopefully my technician will join me on the show to talk about this topic. Today is Current Event Wednesday. We're going to talk about the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers comments on what it is that seems to be his opinion on his thoughts on African-Americans and minorities, and we just want to get into that and see what it's all about. So we'll dissect that today. We'll take a look at it. Hopefully Stan will be back next week. Let's keep him in our prayers, and then we'll move forward with the show. So without delay, we'll get right into the topic. And I want to just start this show with some of his comments. Ermelinda, if you could cancel the music, I'll get right into letting our listeners hear the comments of Mr. Sterling.
Is there anything that I can do to make you feel better?
Well, you can never make me feel better. It's a fighter, and you want to fight. And I'm not the man who wants to fight.
I'm sorry, sweetie. Everything was okay and perfect.
I'm just telling you, you told me you were going to remove it. No, Dennis, the second Dennis who looked at me, made that comment.
I met his mother.
You think I'm a racist?
I don't think you're a racist.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
I think you...
Evil heart.
I don't think so. I think you have an amazing heart, honey. I think the people around you have a poison mind and have a way of thinking.
It's the world. You go to Israel. The blacks are just treated like dogs.
So do you have to treat them like that too?
The white Jews, there's white Jews or black Jews. Do you understand?
And are the black Jews less than the white Jews?
100%, 50%.
Is that right?
It is a question. We don't evaluate what's right and wrong. We live in a society. We live in a culture. We have to live within that culture.
But shouldn't we take a stand for what's wrong and be the change and the difference?
I don't want to change the culture because I can't. It's too big.
But you can change yourself.
I don't want to change it. My girl can't do what I want. I don't want a girl. I'll find a girl that will do what I want. Believe me, I thought you were that girl, because I try to do what you want. But you're not that girl.
There's no need to get upset. No need to get...
I just see what I'm living with, what I'm dealing with.
I'm sorry, I couldn't do anything.
You know, you never do anything, never anything wrong.
But I didn't do anything.
You
made yourself upset.
No, that's not true. You didn't start off by saying, oh, yeah, I understand we're living in a culture.
Because I don't see your views. I wasn't raised the way you were raised.
Well, if you don't feel it, don't come to my games. Don't bring black people and don't come.
Do you know that you have a whole team that's black that plays for you?
Do I know? I support them and give them food and clothes and cars and houses. Who gives it to them? Does someone else give it to them? Do I know that I have? Who makes the game? Do I make the game or do they make the game? There's are 30 owners that create
the game. I'm not going to bring any black people to the stadium.
Okay. I'll stop it right there. And if you will, Irma Linda, will you come in for a moment if you can? And I just want to, you know, this topic is very sensitive, and, you know, we want to kind of dive into it. But you were listening. What's your thoughts on it before I kind of get into it? Are you there?
I am here. I've actually had a very rough week, so... I can give you my thoughts as they've come to me.
Okay.
You know, I think that, I think to me it actually, I've listened to the transcript a couple of different times, and it's actually really hard to hear it in a number of different ways. And to me, I think it's less important to me what he has said, because it's very, to me, there's no question that it's racist and that he very much has a white supremacist view of the world. To me, I've been more interested in the sort of public response that has happened around it, particularly from the NBA. You know, and I think just a number of conversations that have been happening in the public array about how these things are handled and how racism is handled, you know, in the 21st century. From folks like Sterling, you know, and I think I was listening to an interview this morning, actually, where I thought one of the people in the interview, who I can't quite recall who it was, made an excellent point. You know, it's just like, had it been anybody else, nobody might not have said anything, you know, and I think that we do have to talk about power and money and how these things play out. Because there's also been several instances, you know, in the NBA where people have said other racist things and nobody's been held accountable,
mm-hmm.
you know, as well as various other sports. So that's my quick take on it.
Okay. Well, racism is clearly alive in America, and we have to do our due diligence to absorb it and fight it. I think we have to resist that mentality. I think we have to begin to be vigilant in changing what it is that people of his caliber seem to think about people. And let's for a moment look at Magic Johnson. I think he's an excellent example of really fighting your way back from a tremendous sickness to become an excellent manager of his business affairs and his personal life. And, you know, you would think that Magic has made it, you know, with all of his fame and celebrity and his millions. And he, as an athlete and as a man, as a human being, still does not qualify in this man's book. And the statements that he made about black Jews and about black people are really disturbing to me, because if this owner with this plantation mentality, who is walking and living and alive in 2014, what else is going on in our culture and in our society? What do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's very much about, you know, I think I've heard too many times in the past 5 years, and I think particularly probably since Obama's election, that since President Obama's first election, that we now live in a post-racial society, which I think is totally inaccurate and not true. And I think that this is a prime example of that. You know, and I think that we have to acknowledge that. Because I think that, you know, there's a lot of folks who would say that we live in a post-racial society because the civil rights movement was successful, that we don't need to talk about race anymore, right? I feel like a lot of those conversations have been happening in the media surrounding this conversation from Sterling. But I think, you know, I think besides being an example, there's some other things that are currently happening, you know, where we can talk about, we don't live in a post-racial society, you know, all we have to do is turn on the news, you know, and follow what's going on in American politics and in our mm-hmm. in our own communities, you know. I mean, I think last week, you know, we saw the Supreme Court decision around affirmative action that allows states to make the decision basically about whether or not they're going to allow their public universities to use affirmative action, right? And affirmative action was one of the biggest wins of the civil rights movement, you know. In addition to some other things, you know, the Voting Rights Act, and that sort of thing, we're seeing this turn back of some legislative that specifically is about race. You know, so I think that I think it's naive to think that we live in a post-racial society, and I think that the reactions to some of this stuff is because we're living in the United States in a country that is soon going to be a majority people of color. And I think that you see, you know, white supremacy rearing its ugly head, trying to maintain its power.
Wow. You know, I think we've lived in an illusionary state here, that we think things have changed, and you know what the situation is in the courts, and you know what it is on the ground. And as you know, these comments and these type of decisions and these type of laws continue to play itself out in our reality, something has to change. And I don't know where we can begin to start to change the minds and the hearts of people, but it is obvious that this particular owner, and it's different, I think, if you're a player, but I think when you're in ownership and when you're in leadership, it is a responsibility to just kind of, and I say it on the show all the time, is to live justly and to be fair. You know, when you say I give them cars and what would they have without me, and, you know, it's just a plantation mindset, and that is still alive and well. Racism is alive and well in America. And although we have an African-American president, it doesn't change very much. And I think it's a good way to kind of begin to deceive people into thinking that everything has changed and things are gradually getting back to the way they used to be. Although we aren't as openly segregated, we're still segregated. We still have a long way to go into resolving those issues that impact us. So what I want to do now is I want to play a little bit from the NBA's response. So if you'd hold on for a second, I'll cue that up.
Of a conversation that allegedly included Clippers owner Donald Sterling the NBA commenced an investigation, which, among other things, included an interview of Mr. Sterling. That investigation is now complete. The central findings of the investigation are that the man whose voice is heard on the recording and on a second recording from the same conversation that was released on Sunday is Mr. Sterling, and that the hateful opinions voiced by that man are those of Mr. Sterling. The views expressed by Mr. Sterling are deeply offensive and harmful. That they came from an NBA owner only heightens the damage and my personal outrage. Sentiments of this kind are contrary to the principles of inclusion and respect that form the foundation of our diverse, multicultural, and multi-ethnic league. I am personally distraught that the views expressed by Mr. Sterling from within an institution that has historically taken such a leadership role in matters of race relations and caused current and former players, coaches, fans, and partners of the NBA to question their very association with the league. To them, and pioneers of the game, like Earl Lloyd, Chuck Cooper, Sweetwater Clifton, the great, and particularly Magic Johnson, I apologize. Accordingly, effective immediately, I am banning Mr. Sterling for life from any association with the Clippers organization or the NBA. Mr. Sterling may not attend any NBA games or practices. He may not be present at any Clippers facility, and he may not participate in any business or player personnel decisions involving the team.
There you have it. Lifetime ban on the owner that made racist comments. He is suggesting that that's just the way it is in other parts of the world, and talked about Jews and how they treat black Jews, and talked about his own personal feelings, and his personal feelings have spilled over into a community of athletes and the NBA community and the NBA family. And my question, my thought is the NBA's position more about what's right, or is it about saving face? Is it about image? Is it about money? Or is it about the true place in America where this really doesn't fit anymore? And does racism have a place in America? So the question today is racism something that we're going to have to live with for generations? And is it time for us to begin to take strong positions like the one that the NBA and the NBA owners have taken with Mr. Sterling? We have a long way to go to begin to reconcile some hurts and some pains. And to me, this just only widens a wound that has yet to heal in the African-American community, because speaking directly as an African-American on this topic, we have had such trauma, such hurt, such abuse, such disrespect, and this disrespect continues. And I would encourage anyone, let me say this first, let's not lose sight of what the real issue is. The real issue is not about basketball, it's not about the NBA, it's really about a person's views on other people. And I think humanity has gotten out of line in terms of how it sees itself. We all are the same. We may not all look the same, but we're all human beings. And no one human being qualifies himself more than any other human being. If we all have five fingers and five toes, if we all have two legs, one nose, two ears, two eyes, guess what? We're all the same. If we all have the same blood that runs through our veins. And we all have the same heart. We all have the same lungs and the same kidneys. What qualifies another person, another individual, another human being to feel as if he or she is better than anyone else? You that are listening, no matter where you are today, are not better than anyone else. That's regardless of your education, irregardless of your money, or irregardless of your state in the world. We all are human beings first. And every baby that's born is not born with a tendency to be racist. You could put African-American and white and Caucasian, if you want to call it that, and Latinos and all kind of races together, and they will play and they will join and they will merge and they will see themselves as the same until some idea about color or about the context of an individual begins to be shaded and jaded by a very inhumanistic idea. We have to begin to look at ourselves. What do you think? Co-host, are you there?
I am here. I guess I'm not exactly sure I understand the question. In terms of, you know, I don't think that we can talk about even people's individual racism or ideas and notions that are in their head without talking about how the stuff is manifested, you know. And I think that, of course, you know, people do need to look into themselves, to have those conversations with themselves on a really deep level. But at the same time, there are some, like, pretty real structural things, and I think that the internal conversation that we have with ourselves has to be also aligned with some action outside of ourselves, right? And that action has to happen and occur with other people in order for us to change and transform the racist structures that exist.
That's true. And it's the process is being able to dismantle these structures and these institutions that continue to exist. I just think this way of thinking is really warped. And you would think that with the growth in the population and the growth in technology and the growth in just information alone would allow you to see that, you know, things should begin to change to a more balanced human way of experiencing the world, and it's not there yet. And sometimes I just wonder, why is it still alive? What would make one group of people believe in their hearts that they are better than any other group? And I don't care whether you are a Pacific Islander or any other race on this planet. You know, and this is my personal view. I can't see in my heart of hearts how any other person could ever believe that they were better than another person. We're all the same. So where do we go from here? What are your views? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think that, you know, I think what I think about, where does that actually come from, you know, outside of, like, obviously these things are learned in community, right, and through behavior and through practice, right? It's not like you said earlier, we're born and these things are just instilled in our hearts, right? Like, I certainly don't think that that's the case, you know, but I think about this, you know, I think particularly as somebody who works with young people in the community, right, I often see them struggle with how to deal with their differences, right? I think in particular regard, their race and ethnicity and also their socioeconomic status, you know? And as I watch them, you know, they're in a particular developmental stage of their lives, you know, and so as teachers and as mentors, we actually have a significant amount of influence over them, you know, even if we're not always paying attention to it. But I think it's interesting to have conversations with them because they're often a lot more frank about those differences and why they may think that they are better than somebody else, right? And I think one of the things that I feel like is very easily exposed in having those conversations to them is it's almost always about who is in power and who has control. You know, and I think we're also, we live in a society that's, you know, obsessed with consumption. And I think that's so often when I talk with these young people, the reason they think that they may or may not be better than somebody is because they have something materially that makes them better than somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's where we have to start talking about the overlap and collapse of race and ethnicity and socioeconomic status, for example, right? You know, because I think that even within our own respective racial and ethnic communities, you know, it's not like everybody is fine and dandy with each other and that, you know, all black people like all other black people and all Latino people like all other Latino people or all Asian people like other Asian people. There's also profound differences within each of those groups, whether it be based on how much money we make or what country we come from or what part of a country that we come from. Mm-hmm. And so I think we really have to break it down sometime, you know, and talk about, you know, that none of us are actually immune from this type of thinking, you know, and I think that it's good for us to talk about.
That's true. So I think, you know, it just makes me sad as a person that, you know, we have to deal with these issues. And, you know, I don't live my life with rose-colored glasses, but I would like to think that we've made a lot of progress. And I know there are a lot of freedom fighters out there, a lot of people are working for change and a better America. But I just think that this proves that we have a long way to go in terms of relations. And I think, you know, as this abyss in communication begins to widen, there has to be a bridge that's created where we can continue to communicate and dialogue and find ways in which we can get to know each other better, eradicate some of the stereotypes and some of the socioeconomic stigmas that are attached to different ethnic groups and begin to develop the process of working together in unity, you know, under the same sky. We all live here on this earth together. We have to find a way. We have to find ways to begin to unite. This is really disturbing to me for a number of reasons. I live in Richmond, and I call it the capital of Confederacy and racism and slavery. And I know the damage that it has done to my family members, and it continues to do. And so the mindset of slavery still exists in my community and in my family. And when I hear things like this, it just continues to show me why some of my family members are still under the same mindset and mentality that we had back when slavery was alive and really real here in Richmond. We got about a minute and a half left, so I'm going to ask you for your final comments, and then we'll get out of here for this week. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that the thing that I hope people stick with is that we do have to, you know, work to have conversations with people in our own community and people, you know, who may live in the same geographic place as us but aren't necessarily in the same community. I think that there are lots of places in this country where, you know, I think over the past couple of years, you know, the past 10 years really, you know, we've been forced to have these conversations because of some really horrible things that have happened. Everything from Trayvon Martin to Marissa Alexander,
yeah,
to these, you know, statements from Donald Sterling, you know, and to me, I'm just like, we're seeing all of these indicators and these flags that we're not living in a post-racial America. So, I hope people carry with them that it's actually, for those of us who know this, it's a responsibility for us to be in conversation about why that's the case and how we can change it.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate your thoughts. You're a very, very wise young lady, and I appreciate you joining and jumping in and helping out with the show. I want to ask you all that's listening today, you know, let's begin to work on change. And if we can begin to work on ourselves and we can have dialogue and we can try to fix this thing, it's doable. But we have to simply try to do that. We'll talk to you next week. Trying to you from Marvin Rome. Stan Mack, and have a great day. Peace.